This is Jonathan Lane from Fan Film Factor. Today I'm here with Mark Naccarato, who is producing the fan film The Romulan War, and he currently has an Indiegogo campaign with a $10,000 goal that is about 50% of the way there, with about 10 days left at this point. So normally I have a whole bunch of interview questions prepared and I ask them and the other person answers, but today we're going to do something a little bit different. Mark and I are just going to chat about his crowdfunding campaign because he started out like a rocket. They got $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 all within the first 10 to 14 days. And then it stopped. In the last week, they've gotten a few hundred dollars. And I want to talk to Mark to try to figure out what's going on. Why did everything just stop? So let me ask you that question, Mark. What do you think is responsible for this sudden, I mean, you haven't stopped completely, but I mean, it's slowed down to a trickle. What do you think is responsible for that?
I'm going to blame Romulan infiltrators.
Okay.
I think we've... Can I say temporal anomaly?
Temporal anomaly? Are you blame temporal anomaly? Or
no, like a parallel universe.
Okay, because I want to tell you guys something interesting, because that's something that happened very recently, is the Star Trek fan film Temporal Anomaly was the first fan film since the guidelines were announced by CBS and Paramount that got a call from CBS saying, hey, we're not exactly happy with what you're doing here. And a lot of fans were suddenly panicking, like, okay, CBS is trying to shut down all fan films. Interestingly enough, that's actually not what they were trying to do, but Temporal Anomaly had gotten flagged because, at least in my opinion, I think what happened was is they saw that there was some footage in the trailer of Picard and Riker and Data from, I think, from Nemesis or from Insurrection or from both. Just little clip scenes. Apparently they're just in the sort of first minute or two of establishing scenes of this fan film. But of course CBS didn't like it because one of the guidelines says you can't use existing footage. So they got a call. The fellow who's creating it is Samuel Cockings. He got a call from CBS, got an email first, and then he's talking to them on the phone. But they're working with him. I mean, I've talked to Sam about this, and they said, look, we want you to be able to make your fan film. We just want it to be made in a way that doesn't violate the guidelines. So there's apparently a few things that Samuel needs to change, and he's talking with CBS, but they're not trying to shut anything down. But I think that fans were kind of a little freaked out by that. Do you think that might have happened, that people are saying, oh, I don't want to give to your fan film because I don't think it's going to be made?
I don't know. But first, let me clarify. It was probably a poor choice of words when we first talked. I didn't mean to imply that Temporal Anomaly was the reason I think that that donation slowed down. I was making sort of a joke that we were in a temporal anomaly happened, and we went to a different universe where people weren't giving my film anymore.
You can blame me for bringing up the actual Temporal Anomaly. But the thing is, we're looking at what's been happening lately. You know, and I want to say something else. You know, a lot of people are just going to say, well, we'll blame Alec Peters and Axanar. Well, the thing is that Axanar happened 2 years ago now. The court case has been settled. There have been other crowdfunding campaigns. Just last year, the Deep Space Nine crowdfunding campaign for What We Left Behind made like $650,000. And there have been both other Star Trek fan films as well as other fan films that have made money. The Circuit made $100,000. And I know a lot of other fan films have made less, especially the Star Trek ones. And in fact, very recently, The Holy Core, which was Gary O'Brien's second fan film, he made the great fan film Chance Encounter. He had a $12,000 Kickstarter, and he did not get there. He got about a third of the way, and unfortunately, the Kickstarter, the rule is if you don't make it to your goal, you get nothing, so he got nothing. And that, of course, happened before Temporal Anomaly. But what is happening? What's going on right now that suddenly people are not opening up their wallets?
I don't know. It is weird. You know, and I don't know that there is one clear answer. But it is strange that it started off and then it just slowed. I'd like to think, you know, we do have a little bit of time left. We are going to be releasing some more content from the film. I'd like to think that that's going to generate some interest and people will tune back in. I'm really not sure. I do know that one thing that, frankly, might be, you know, working against me personally is that people don't really know who I am. I'm not somebody who has been working the convention circuit for 10 years. I haven't been, you know, popping up on panels or doing internet shows or web series. And I don't have a track record of previous Star Trek fan films. I think in recent months, possibly within the last year, people are a little bit hesitant, a little gun shy to contribute to a fan film. And there's this added thing of sort of, I'm an unknown factor. Like, you know, I'm not a known quantity. I don't have a lot of connections in that community. And I'm willing to entertain that. I actually got feedback from somebody on that over the internet once. And he told me, this was a gentleman in my own state, where I live in Tennessee, and he had written me and said, you know, this looks really cool, but a lot of us are asking is, who are you people? And so 5 years ago, that may not have been as big of a question. Maybe not, but I don't really have that sort of Trek credibility in the fan circuit that I think people might be looking at before they decide to contribute, and that's completely understandable. Having said all of that, it still doesn't explain how we had a big spike at the beginning, and that's dropped.
I'd like to point out the obvious, though, because I sort of think this in the back of my mind. Last week was also tax day in America. On Tuesday, April 17th, everybody owed their taxes, and that seemed to be the week that nobody paid you anything.
Well, certainly that you know, I wouldn't rule that out either. But, you know, the first week of the campaign was the week as people were preparing their taxes, many people. So, again, I don't know that it's necessarily one thing. I don't even necessarily think that it will last beyond this week. I'd like to think not. But, you know, we're still going to make the Romulan War. It's just going to be the matter of how many corners we're going to have to cut and what has to be changed around and retweaked without being able to hit that goal. And, you know, I want to be positive about it, but also I will be realistic about it, and if that doesn't happen, we'll roll with the punches. We did shoot a lot of our footage already. Where the big impact will happen if we don't hit our goal, the big impact will happen on sort of the post side, where we'll have to scale down the visuals. And for those of you who have seen our pitch video, and then we added a couple more videos within the last week, we've set a pretty good standard with the visuals. We're proud of the effects. There's quite a bit that's been done that nobody has seen yet, but we will have to scale down in the ability to tell the story if we don't
hit that.
What
does that mean by scale down? Does that mean fewer effects, or just mean the effects are not going to look as good?
I think there will be fewer. I am, you know, I was born and raised an editor, and so I understand a lot about pacing and how the, you know, modern filmmaking, the cuts are faster. So we want to have a lot of shots to keep people interested and add that dramatic impact, especially in the action sequences. But yeah, if we don't hit that goal, we would have to scale down on certainly on the number of shots we're able to do. And that will impact the story we can tell.
And let me tell you guys a little bit about the story, because I'm very intrigued by this. I don't know how many of you listening to this have read my interview with Mark from about a week and a half ago, but the Romulan War is actually about the Romulan War. You know, this is that period just before the founding of the Federation. And, you know, fans wanted to know what happened, but Enterprise got canceled before you could actually get into all the good stuff. So these guys, obviously, they're under the constraints of the guidelines, as we all know. And for anybody who's curious, they are following as many of the guidelines as they can. I think you're trying to follow all of them.
Yeah.
You don't have Star Trek in your title. You're not really paying anybody as professionals. I mean, the only thing that you're really paying for is just the time it's going to take to get the effects done. Your actors are trained actors, but, you know, you're not really paying them scale or amazing amounts of money. Are you paying them anything, by the way?
We did, you know, whenever we had the shoot, I did need to pay them a small fee because there was some, we needed their time. They drove a little ways to get to the studio. And so I only thought it was fair that we paid the folks. On the last film I made, nobody got paid. There was
okay.
no There were no.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're basically you gave them gas money. I mean, it doesn't sound like you know you paid
you know,
them.
Yeah, it's essentially we gave them gas money and we fed them. So.
Yeah, so I mean, when I said you didn't pay anybody, I mean, I wasn't trying to cover anything up. You're reimbursing them for gas. You're giving them lunch. That does not count as paying people. So at this point, and you're allowed to use professional actors as long as you're not paying them. That's the whole rule in the Phantom. People are like, oh, he's using professional actors. No, you're not allowed to pay them. When it says an amateur production, it means nobody gets paid. And, you know, that's what they're saying. But you don't have Star Trek in your title. You're not making more than $50,000. Crowdfunding, you're barely getting to 10. My understanding is you are going to be not making anything that's over a 15-minute episode. You're going to be trying to keep it to two of those episodes. You know, everything about this is following the guidelines. In fact, even your perks, you know, the whole thing about perks is, you know, people think you're not allowed to give away any perks. You are allowed to give away perks. You just can't give away anything that is licensed or violates anybody's copyright. So you guys have some fantastic perks. I mean, you're having T-shirts, but your T-shirts, I'm guessing, don't have the word Romulan on them, right?
No. The T-shirts are an ongoing parade of design and concept ideas.
Yeah, so they don't say Star Trek. They don't say Romulan. It's design and concept ideas. You're not, you know, throwing the Enterprise on there. You're not throwing a, you know, an actual Romulan bird of prey on there. So you don't have to worry about that. You've got posters. By the way, folks, do you know these guys have, like, the coolest perk ever? I want folks to know about this. For $100, and this is what I donated, for $100, you get to record your voice on your cell phone or whatever, and it will appear in their fan film somewhere. And for $250, which I'm still thinking of upping my donation to, you yourself have the option of appearing in their fan film. Your face, your delivering lines, which I have to ask the question. I don't own a green screen, and I don't have an Enterprise-era uniform. So if I sign up for that, how does that happen?
Well, first of all, yeah, it would. We do want to find out what people's ability is to record. We have already been contacted by somebody who has their own green screen and pro equipment, so they're going to do it. But most people aren't going to have access to that. And just keep in mind, too, that a lot of these roles that we're talking about won't necessarily be people who need any kind of a uniform. They will be, some of them are civilians. You know, you could record into your phone in a dark room or in front of a corrugated steel shed, and you're a colonist. You know, you're on a planet that's being attacked by the Romulans, and you need to call for help. You're putting out a distress signal, or you're talking to the folks back home about how scared you are of living in Romulan-occupied space. So we have a lot of flexibility on that. That's one of the cool things about our project is it is episodic. It does not lock itself into, you know, a set of eight cast members who are repetitive all the time on a bridge that's blowing up and stuff like that. We do have a pretty flexible format. We have a bunch of sort of these roles that can be done by anybody. Hopefully they'll be acted well. But, you know, if they're not, that's the whole point of it being a fan film, right, is the fans get to participate. And
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to deliver my lines with an Arnold Schwarzenegger accent, and I'm going to like get down now.
I will kill you, Romulans. You, the inferior. Yeah. So I mean, that's one of the things we want to do is we want to try plugging fans in whenever we can. Another thing that that we're going to be, well, I guess I'm probably getting a little ahead of myself. I want to talk a little bit about later about what we're going to be doing with Memory Alpha on our website, and there'll be some opportunities there for fans to be involved as well.
Well, let's let later happen right now, because one of the things I wanted to ask as we were talking is, okay, so here you are with about 10 days left, mm-hmm. and what are you going to do now to sprint those last 10 days? How are you going to get people to notice you and to go to your Indiegogo page and click the donate button and put in their credit card and get them to do all that? How are you going to make that happen?
Well, you know, a lot of we're going to continue what we did in the first week was just to, you know, keep trying to be visible on social media, keep trying to get the word out on Facebook and some of these groups and talking to folks like you and help us get the word out. One of the things that we are also going to be doing, you'll see, and this was part of our plan originally, was to escalate the amount of content that we're making available so people can get a better look at what we're doing and what the film might look like. And you'll probably see almost certainly a trailer or two over the next 10 days. You'll probably see some behind-the-scenes stuff. And we'll be talking a lot, too, about Memory Alpha. Memory Alpha is on our website, www.theromulanwar.com. And once you contribute at the $10 or above level, you'll have access to Memory Alpha, and you can go in there and access some extra content, not the least of which are behind-the-scenes stuff, some trailers, some storyboards, and we're also going to have some story content as well. One of the things we're trying to finish up is some audio dramas, and these are bits from the film that were originally conceived a while back, and we've had some guest writers come along and turn some of the content into sort of audio dramas running anywhere from 3 to 6 minutes that will fill in the gaps when the film comes out of some plot lines that we talked about. So that's some extra content we're looking at, and probably some images and some other goodies.
Do you feel like you should have had more of this front-loaded?
This is my first Indiegogo, and this is all new to me. One of the hardest things that I've had to do from the moment the project was conceived years and years and years ago was to do the pitch video. So going on camera is not something I particularly care for. See me in the pitch video, you can get a kick out of the outtakes from that. But yeah, this is my first Indiegogo. There's certainly a lot of lessons learned. One of the things that sort of misfired was we tried to launch the campaign on a Monday, and through no fault of our own and on an error that happened on Indiegogo's side, we ended up launching 2 days late on a Wednesday. And would that have made a difference? I don't know. But it was, you know, something that had misfired. We did plot out a lot of our releases, things we were working on in the first week. But, you know, and I'm not going to lie, I don't do this full time. I have a day job. I have a wife and 3 kids, small children, and real life has jumped in and inserted itself into the middle of the campaign. At my day job, there's some things that have amped up in a new urgency, so it's pulled me away probably for a few more hours than I would like to every day. So, yeah, looking back, there's definitely things I would have done differently, but having said all that, I'm comfortable where we are, and I feel like if we don't hit the goal, we can roll with the punches and still be able to put out a quality product. It just isn't what I envisioned. And, you know, that should be mentioned, too, is when I originally conceived the story, it was designed as a web series with 16 different episodes, 16 chapters. And we shot a lot of it like that. And it will have to be retooled in some fashion anyway to get the time back to a more manageable level. But so I'm already in the pattern sort of having to fall back and regroup on having to, you know, deal with certain realities. The fan film guidelines have, you know, put a new restriction on the amount of time you can use. And now we're looking at possibly having a new restriction based on the amount of money we can or can't raise. So that's, you know, not something completely new to me. So we're prepared for that, and we'll roll with the punches on it.
Here's a thought, and it's completely out of left field, but would you consider waiting a couple of months and then doing another Indiegogo campaign, and this one with a $5,000 goal?
I wouldn't rule that out at all. And honestly, that may be something, and I don't know if this makes the interview or not, but I do want to pick your brain. I haven't really gone through to see what is the statute of limitations on when you can start another Indiegogo campaign. I don't really know.
Well,
I don't have to pick
my brains. I have no idea. I actually don't know if Indiegogo specifically has a limit, but, you know, let's say they did. You can't do another campaign for the same thing within 2 or 3 months or whatever. First of all, you can wait those two or 3 months. But there's nothing that says you can't go over to GoFundMe. or to Kickstarter. I mean, I wouldn't go to Kickstarter because they have that whole if you don't make your goal, you get nothing rule. But, you know, GoFundMe is fairly easy, and they're not going to say, oh, you just had an Indiegogo. I mean, granted, you might have a bunch of people saying, you know, why are you doing another campaign? But you just say it right up front. You know, look, we tried to raise $10,000. We didn't make it. We're going to try this again and see if, you know, we can do it better the second time. I mean, even if we only make a couple of $1,000s and we don't make our goal, that's still more than we had to work with before.
Sure. And like I said, because the format is kind of modular and it's episodic, you know, there's no reason why the Indiegogo campaign that's happening now is for part one, you know, the first 15 minute segment. And then we do another one for the second part. Yeah, we've looked at a lot of that, but I'd like to try to avoid that. I'd like to see us get all the way to 10,000. I think people are going to be really pleased with the result once they see the results, but we're not ruling out, you know, anything. Like I said, this is a project I've been working on for, wow, almost, I think actually over 10 years now that I'm thinking about it. And so that's the other thing, too, is there's no studio leaning on me for a launch date. You know, if it takes another 6 months to get this done so that we have the resources we need, then that's what it will take. I don't have to worry about sweeps or any of that other stuff. The only obligation I would have is to make sure that it gets completed, because that's what people contributed for and that's what fans expect. When that gets completed, honestly, is really up to our donors. If our donors come through it and we can hit that 10,000 or beat it, then things move a lot faster and a lot quicker. And if we don't and we have to come up with a new strategy or do a second campaign, then that pushes the timeline back. And that's unfortunate, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, as Yogi Berra once said, if the fans don't want to come out to the ballpark, there's nothing you can do to stop them.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Romulan War, and to me, I'm as excited about this fan film as I've been about any in recent months or years.
Right.
You know, it's a story you want to see. It has a mockumentary, you know, mock documentary format, very much like Prelude to Axanar, which I think worked really well for them, and allows a lot of story with very quick-cut short scenes. So you don't have a lot of this, you know, long, drawn-out drama where, you know, people have to walk onto the bridge and they turn around and they issue orders or whatever. So you can tell a much tighter story in a documentary format. And your visual effects, which are being done by the aforementioned Samuel Cockings, you know, if people haven't seen them yet, they are spectacular. You know, and there's this Klingon-ish looking Romulan ship that I think a lot of fans are wanting to know, why are the Romulans using Klingon design years before the Romulans used Klingon design? And I know you're going to tell us that, right? Not in this interview, I'm sure.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. And I will tell you, and I suspect it will be met with a bit of controversy. But Sam laid some of this out when he talked about Stormbird in the Trek Yards episode that features the Stormbird. So here's my fanon take on it, okay? The Klingons rarely invent anything. The Klingons take what they want and adapt it to their needs, possibly improve on it. Okay? They plunder. Their society rewards warriors and a martial lifestyle. It does not necessarily reward science, technology, and advancement. It's easier for them to take what they want. So our premise is, the Romulan Stormbird, that ship was the original design that the Klingons appropriated by the time they get to Kirk's era. And it becomes their design that the Romulans had always had. Okay? And so that's my perception on that. And really the information we get in the episode that talks about this is sort of a belief that our Enterprise crew has about stolen plans from the Klingons or whatever, but let's be honest, Starfleet intelligence isn't always right, okay? They could have gaps in their intelligence and what they know. So our premise is the Romulan Stormbird was the first ship of that design. It was co-opted by the Klingons because it was such an impressive design, and then that's what we see when we get to the era of Kirk.
And who knows, maybe the Romulans just felt like tit for tat, we're going to take our design back. So they grabbed the D7 and they decided, okay, we're going to use that design. Ha!
Well, sure. They and then the Romulans made an you know, mimicked what the Klingons had, you know, they saw some improvements. That, and of course, in our canon, in our universe, the Romulans and Klingons had already been at war before they go to war with Earth. So there was a conflict between the Romulans and the Klingons in the 22nd century pre-Archer.
And who says that didn't happen? I mean, obviously, if
there's nobody
the Romulans
that says it doesn't
happen. Went to war later on, you know, they probably share a border.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. So it was during that conflict that the Klingons and the Romulans encountered each other's ships and technology. The Klingons got a look at the Stormbird, decided, wow, that just wiped the floor with our fleet. Maybe we ought to try and copy that.
I got a fantastic idea. And granted, you're not going to actually have this in your movie, but it would be great for the background. So the Klingons capture one of those Stormbirds.
Sure.
And suddenly the Klingons are using that technology against the Romulans, and suddenly the Romulans are like, okay, nobody gets captured anymore. If you're going to be captured, you destroy your ship. And that's why the Romulans do it.
Well, I mean, hey, that fits with the established canon, that it fits with our canon. Why not? I mean, the truth is, you know, in our story, and as we know from the popular Trek lore, that the identity of the Romulans is largely unknown by the Federation, circa 2266. So we make a point in the Romulan War of showing specific situations where when the Romulans are starting to lose, they self-destruct all their ships. So the humans never do get to see a Romulan body and what it looks like. I won't try not to do too many spoilers, but there's at least two occasions where the humans learn the secret of what the Romulans look like. But for reasons I won't get into, that secret is kept. Okay.
This is why I'm so excited about this fan film. I mean, can you feel it? Can you feel it from this interview, the fact that, I mean, we're talking about all this. This is what Star Trek fans love to do, whether it's the correct canon or not. Do you believe this happened or whether you didn't? This is why you guys have to go and donate to this. They need the $10,000. If you haven't donated yet, just do it. Just go and do it. The link is up on this page. Just click on it and just do it, because you know you want to see this. You know you want to see this. That's all I'm saying. Okay, there you go. That's for free. I gave that to you. That's your plug.
And, yes, we cannot accept Gold Press Latinum, unfortunately.
Because I have a bunch of that I can give you. Actually, you know what? It's chocolate. I got that at the old Star Trek Experience. I have a whole bunch of, like, very, very decaying gold press Lantham. I don't think it's good chocolate anymore.
It was once. It's replicated chocolate, right?
It's replicated chocolate. It's replicated right now. It's probably chocolate dust because the Star Trek Experience closed down in, like, what, 2009?
I know. I never got to go to it. I'm really bummed. I never got to make it to that.
Oh, man. I used to, like, almost live there. You know, nobody wants to hear this during the interview, but I actually worked on Star Trek The Experience. I wrote Quark's Menu.
I think I feel like I read that somewhere somewhere.
Well, there's going to be a blog about it where I'm actually going to have the menu, which hasn't been seen in many, many years, the original menu. I just have to actually have some time to write that blog about how that happened. And then years later, I did the two-dimensional Okudagrams for Borg Invasion 4D. Pretty much anything that wasn't 3D animation was my 2D animation. So, you know, I had a lot of experience with the Star Trek Experience, so I would go there quite often, and it was a business expense, so I got to deduct my trips to Las Vegas.
Nice.
But anyway, this is an interview about you, not about me. So let's just wrap it up. What are the last few things you want to tell people to get them to go and click on that donate button?
We want to keep the Star Trek fan films viable. We don't want to see too many fan films, and, you know, of course I have a vested interest because I have a fan film and an Indiegogo going on now, but as a fan, as somebody who appreciates and watches and has contributed to fan films before, it would be bad if we have 2, 3, 4 fan films that fail to materialize at the level that people are expecting or don't meet their goals. We don't want to see people get discouraged, right? I mean, if you have several financial setbacks on these fan films, it might discourage people with their own unique voices who might be considering doing their own film from coming forward.
Well, I have to say, I agree with your point about that we don't want fan films to die. We don't want the well to dry up. And, you know, obviously the days of the six-figure funding of Star Trek fan films, I think, are unfortunately gone. Whether you want to blame Axanar for it or whether you want to blame CBS for it, you're just not going to have, you know, $100,000, $500,000, $600,000 fan films anymore, you know, at least not until 2061 when Star Trek becomes public domain. But you know, at least for right now, you could still have a $10,000 Star Trek fan film. You can have a $50,000 Star Trek fan film.
Right.
But only with the fans' help and donations. And, yeah, I understand that, you know, the fans are feeling like they've been burned, and some of the fans are feeling like, you know, oh, these, you know, the fan films aren't as good anymore, and I'm not seeing George Takei playing Sulu, and I'm not, you know, seeing Robert Beltran and Tim Russ, and I want to see those. Well, you know, I'm sorry, you're not. But that's not to say that you can't still have very good Star Trek fan films. But they are fan films, and they are by the fans, for the fans. They are paid for also by the fans. And if we stop paying for them, yeah, they're going to stop happening, except for the few people who are independently wealthy. But really, This is our chance as fans to say, look, we want our Star Trek. Whether you like Discovery or not, especially if you don't, if you want to see more Star Trek like this, yeah, you're going to have to pay for it. But it's going to a good cause. It's going to fans doing really good fan fiction. They're trying their hardest. They love Star Trek as much as you who are listening to it love Star Trek. And, you know, if that's going to take $10 or $20 or $50 out of your wallet if you can afford it, or $250 if you want to appear in this fan film, folks, you know, you don't have to do it for every single fan film, but every so often, just give it a thought, give it a consideration.
Yeah. And keep in mind, too, is, you know, I've heard people complain about having to, you know, pay per, like, CBS Digital, you know, access to Discovery. And, I mean, I get that. You know, here's the thing here is, you know, you can contribute to the Romulan War, and unlike on Discovery, you can get your name on the credits. And so, yeah, fan films are an important voice, just like fan fiction is, and audio, and all of that, and even, you know, cosplay and all these other things. Those are all important expressions of what Star Trek means to people. And, you know, this is our contribution. I'm trying to get this film produced. If you contribute, depending on what level it is, you will have your name in the credits, or you can have a speaking role, or you could be on camera. And we're trying to open it up so people can actually participate in the making of the film and have a presence there. And I hope that's, you know, something people will find interesting and separate us a little bit from some of the other productions. But I agree with you 100%. We are not going to see six- and seven-figure Star Trek fan films anymore, for better or worse. And I think we're sitting in that's kind of where we are now, is maybe people – we're going through a period where people are realizing they're not going to see – you know, Walter Koenig or George Takei or Robert Beltran or Tim Russ in somebody's production anymore, and they're thinking about whether they want to contribute to something that doesn't include those things. And it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, you know, I think that shows how critical the casting and the characters to the actual Star Trek series were, that people still want to see all these characters. And I've always been drawn to a lot of the characters on Star Trek, but to me personally, the overall universe of Star Trek, that notion of humanity rising above a devastating nuclear war and making first contact, peaceful first contact with an alien race, and going through these struggles as a species and getting out into space and exploring and eventually creating the Federation of Planets. To me, that overall utopian, uplifting future and how it comes to be, really, I find that And maybe it's just me. It's an abstraction in some ways, but I find that more interesting than specifically Leonard Nimoy's performance as Spock or Brent Spiner's performance as Data, which are all amazing and contribute greatly. But I feel like Star Trek is bigger than just one character or even one cast of character. It's an idea. You know, we're looking for those people to help us out. We're looking for people who see that kind of that bigger picture and not just because they're, you know, huge fans of Patrick Stewart and waiting for Patrick Stewart to appear in a film or something. That's who we're trying to reach. That's what inspired me about Star Trek. And, you know, hopefully there's enough of those in $10, $30, $50, $100 increments to get us to our goal and we can finish this at the quality that we want and fans deserve.
All right. Well, we'll find out in the next 10 or 11 days. So stay tuned and keep your fingers crossed. And for goodness sake, if those fingers haven't clicked on the donate button yet, just do it, man. Just do it, woman. Just do it.
You can find all the links and the click-throughs to through www.theromulanwar.com. Absolutely take a look this week and over the next several days, and you'll find out more about what we're offering through Memory Alpha in the way of goodies and behind the scenes and extra content.
All righty. Well, Mark, thank you for chatting with me today. Best of luck. And, hey, hopefully the Romulan War will live long and prosper.
Well, thanks a lot, Jonathan. I appreciate you, everything you're doing to help fan films in general and ours as well.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.